What's up, guys? New episode of One Could Argue, and I'm going to hop right into it this week. We have a special guest, and the subject is gun control. It's a conversation that I personally have been having amongst my friends for some time now, and I really wanted to have the opportunity to have the conversation with someone who is as credible and as unbiased as possible, because it's kind of hard to have a conversation with someone on either side without, you know, naturally that defensiveness that can come with a conversation on a topic that is as sensitive as the topic of gun control in this current climate. So shout out to Jonathan for connecting me with Sam. I was able to get on a call with him last week, and literally he was able to come up the next week so we can get this out the way. So I'm excited for you guys to hear it. I hope it sparks a lot of conversations amongst you, and I look forward to hearing you guys' thoughts on it. So we're going to get right into some segue music from my good friend Ben Didelo, and then we're going to hop right into the episode. So let's do it. This is my first guest on the podcast, really, outside of my friends. Sam Hayes III. Do I say the third, or do I just say Sam Hayes?
Just Sam Hayes.
Sam Hayes. Okay. All right.
The third only counts when I'm trying to be real formal. Samuel R. Hayes III.
Got you.
To scare people. Scare bill collectors and shit.
All right. So we have Sam Hayes here, and actually, you know what? We literally just got done explaining to him how I don't want to be that person who just reads off stuff that I found online about people when I have them here who knows you better than you to a certain extent.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, who you are, and why we're here.
Firearms instructor, security consultant extraordinaire. I'm like the guru of all things physical security and firearms training. Got my start back in 1987. That's when I put on my first security uniform. You know, I'm a product of a hostile environment, born and raised in the Bronx, got my introduction to guns and violence very early, turned that into an actual career as a result of having a good father figure around. It kept me from going to jail, but it didn't necessarily keep me out of the streets. So, you know, one of the things that I think makes me unique as a firearms and security professional is that I understand how the other side thinks. And some of my colleagues in the industry have said that, you know, my offerings are unique because I come from a perspective of having walked with one foot in both sides of that world.
Right.
You know, when I was a young knucklehead dude, I was running around playing a knockout game before it was called the knockout game.
I definitely used to do that a few times.
You know, I got a couple of mug shots out there and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't have any convictions, so it still allowed me to be able to own firearms and be in the security industry and do what I do. And, you know, now my focus is primarily on teaching lawful private citizens how to defend themselves against dudes like what I used to be.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I've never been a cop. I've never done the military special operations thing. So everything that I bring to you is strictly from an urban environment, dealing with violent criminal actors, you know, from that perspective. I'm passionate about getting our people to understand that the Second Amendment is their right. It's like our first civil right. You know, we took arms after we were freed slaves to keep ourselves from becoming kidnapped and brutally tortured and all these types of things. But the black community has lost themselves in terms of being able to defend themselves and exercise their Second Amendment rights. So I'm passionate about trying to get people back into that mindset of thinking that, you know, when you call 911, you might have to wait 7 to 12 minutes, depending on what neighborhood you live in. They might not even come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got to be real about being able to put in work and get shit done yourself.
Right.
You know, particularly our sisters, you know, because unfortunately we've seen what I call a pussification of the American male. And a lot of sisters is out here having to fend for themselves as single moms and single women and being attacked and stuff like that. And they don't. And brothers is just not stepping up and being and playing their roles in the black family unit to take care of our sisters and our children. So, you know, they got to do what they have to do, you know. And a lot of sisters have really stepped up. You know, I would say that they probably contribute to probably 40% of my client base now.
Nice. You know? And I remember when we were on the phone talking, you were saying how a lot of issues certain companies have in this sector is getting women to get involved.
Right. What's been identified in the firearms industry is that women are probably the largest growing demographic. And within that largest growing demographic of women shooters, black women represent a large portion of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's, from a business perspective, everybody wants that because they recognize that, you know, women probably, because of their shopping habits, they're probably
their buying power, yeah.
Right. They're more like, and they're more likely to spend without overthinking things like men sometimes do. You know, and women want to be more thorough. So like when I have a client who's new, who's a guy, he just goes out and buys a gun. The female clients that I have, they'll buy a gun, they'll buy a safe, they'll buy the cleaning kit, they'll buy a holster, mm-hmm. you know, so the reality is they're better customers, you know.
Right.
Last year I had more repeat customers or repeat clients who were women than I did men.
Hmm.
You know, so for me, for 2018, I said I need to make sure that I have enough service offerings for women so that they recognize that they're not an afterthought. Like these are classes specifically for women, and we're going to teach them and deal with issues that women have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. So you know that's working out really well. One of my biggest challenges though is educating our community on the nuances of gun ownership and navigating the gun industry and what all of that's about. Because there's so much bad information in the media that people don't really have good resources that they can determine what's good and what's bad. So my objective is to be that sounding board for them, which is why I accepted your invitation to come here.
And that's awesome, and I appreciate that. So with that being said, in regards to women who are now looking to get involved in the process of becoming gun owners, getting involved in the process of being aware of the ways that are available to them to protect themselves and their family, what do you feel are, or do you feel as though there are any preconceived notions or wrong information, or maybe any even just apprehension that they may be failing in regards to that?
There's definitely a lot of apprehension, but I think that apprehension just is a fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. You know, I would probably say the large majority of people in the country who know anything about guns or think they know anything about guns got most of their education from television and movies.
Right.
Which is the wrong place to get it, because when you shoot somebody in the chest, they don't explode and fly through the air and fall out the window.
Right.
You know, the reality is handgun bullets are really actually pretty bad at killing people.
Mm.
You know, if you don't hit specific targets, regardless to whether it's a 9mm, 40, 45, or whatever, that person is probably going to continue to do what they were doing before you shot them, after you shot them.
Right, right.
You know, so with women, the apprehension and the fear typically comes from them just not knowing. And when they go to the range with their brothers, their cousins, their uncle who was in the Marine Corps, they usually end up getting taught wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a bad experience with it, and then they don't want to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage all women that come to me that want to learn, I encourage them to, okay, between now and the time that we actually go to the range, don't listen to anything else anybody else has to tell you about
right,
guns.
Right.
Because they're going to tell you some crazy shit. Like, I just got a text this morning from a woman who wants to do a lesson with me. And we've been talking for a few months and she didn't have a gun. Well, she tells me this morning she went out and bought a 40 caliber,
mm-hmm.
a 40 caliber Glock. Well, that's probably the worst gun that a beginner shooter could buy, because 40 caliber has a really intense and really brutal recoil impulse.
Mm-hmm.
So when she shoots that gun, the recoil and the kick is going to be so harsh for her that it could potentially turn her off from wanting to continue to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so things like that I try to avoid by trying to be accessible and make myself available to people, to new shooters, and make myself approachable for new shooters, particularly women. You know, it's sometimes a little bit difficult, me being a guy, because a lot of these women have issues with sexual assault or, you know, domestic violence, or they've been accosted physically in some way by a man, and that's created a mental scar for them that now makes them kind of leery of exposing themselves to me and their vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to work really hard to make sure that I provide them with a comfortable environment so that they feel like training with me is a safe space for them to express all of that.
Right. So with that being said, and this sort of segues into the conversation I wanted to have with you about just preparation for gun owners. If a woman, or anyone that matter, I say woman because that's what we were just talking about,
mm-hmm.
if she has been in a situation where she has experienced domestic abuse or sexual abuse or anything of that nature, are there any other types of precautions or lessons or classes available so that they're not overreacting to situations right. because they have a weapon? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a problem with a lot of people, not just women. You know, I see a lot of people that may have just had a break-in,
right.
or they've just had, you know, a carjacking, or somebody in their neighborhood was killed, and their knee-jerk reaction is, oh, it's time to go out and buy a gun.
Right.
You know, and I typically tell people, you know, that's a huge responsibility to go out and buy a gun and then think that you're going to use it in self-defense. Because in that situation, you have to reconcile with yourself that you're actually going to take a life,
right.
if need be. And that's not easy for a lot of people to accept. So, you know, once I talk to a person and see where their mindset is as it pertains to that, I may recommend that they get pepper spray and, you know, and a dog, you know, upgrade your security system. Gradually walk yourself into that, you know, have something that allows you to be able to feel comfortable and safe in your environment now. But gradually walk yourself into the gun ownership piece by seeking out quality and qualified instruction, having an instructor take you to the range and maybe renting a few guns to see what you're going to be comfortable with before actually making a purchase and deciding that this is something that you really want to do. Because it's a huge responsibility.
Are there any checklists that you would have when you're speaking to someone who's saying, okay, but for me, for instance, I initially, because of how I was brought up, guns just seemed like something that criminals had.
Right.
It was like, oh, if you have a gun, you're either a police officer or you're someone who's out criminal, here just right. knocking people off.
Right, right.
So later on in life, as I started to grow and just being around other people who had weapons, but it was, you can see how it was more of a pastime of a sense. It's like, oh, I like to go hunting, or I just clean it, or it's like, oh, now right. I'm around guns more, and it makes them seem a little bit less alarming than it was at first. Because, like, wait, this person's just sitting. Like, for instance, if this was a couple years ago when you just came in here with a weapon on you, I'd be like, why do you have a gun on? You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing? Like, why do you need that right now? You know what I mean? Exactly. So, but like I said, as I grew and got a little bit more familiar, I was like, okay, this could possibly be something that you have just for protection, and then just seeing how...
And you're starting to recognize the recreational value of it.
Right.
You know, because everybody that's walking around with a gun, or everybody who owns a gun, you know, I know a lot of people who own guns that don't carry them.
Right.
You know, they want to go recreational shooting, or they want to go hunting, or maybe they're competitors. Mm-hmm. You know, they compete in competitions, but they don't necessarily carry a gun. I think that to answer your question, it depends on why you want to own the gun. If you want the gun for self-defense, there's a different mindset you have to be in than if you want to own a gun because you want to start shooting in competitions. If you want to own a gun for self-defense, you have to really sit down and have a hard conversation with yourself and with your family and say, you know what? Am I the kind of person that can point a firearm at another person, press the trigger multiple times, knowing that the end result could potentially be them dying? Are you okay with killing another human being? If the answer to that is yes, you then have to ask yourself, are you okay with the psychological trauma that's going to come after that when you're ostracized by your neighbors, by your church members, by your, you know, potentially lose your job because of the negative publicity? Like, there are a lot of things that could take place after you're involved in a shooting that a lot of people don't think about that have to do with the backlash or the after effect of being involved in a shooting. Then you have to ask yourself, am I mentally strong enough to where if I go through a shooting that I can actually go through a criminal case for the next 2 to 3 years that could potentially financially bankrupt me and put undue attention on me and my family that I don't want? You know, these are questions you have to ask yourself because none of it is easy, you know? Pulling the trigger is just the beginning. There's a lot that goes with it afterwards. You know, in my first shooting, it took them 3 years to clear me. And during that 3-year period, every time my phone rang, every time somebody knocked on my door, I'm thinking it was the cops coming to get me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, oh, shit, here it goes. I'm going to jail. You know, because I didn't know anything about the law at that point, you know. So I'm thinking that it's taken 3 years because they're investigating me the whole time. And, you know, and when they finally cleared me, I asked the detective, I'm like, well, you know, can you tell me what took so long? He was like, this is Philadelphia. He was like, you're not the only person who shot somebody. Your shit just happened to be at the bottom of the bottom of the pile on my desk.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just like a waiting game until they got around to me, to me type of thing. You know, so it's that mental stress. I would never want to go through that again because literally it was 3 years of me being scared shitless of the unknown, you know? So that's something that people don't think about.
So with that being said, are there things now that you know as a gun owner that initially you would have maybe gave a second thought when you were initially thinking about getting a weapon, or does it still out? I'm sure it still outweighs as far as understanding like protection and things like that, but were there certain things that you would have put more time into understanding and grasping, or maybe figuring out, okay, what are alternative routes to this, even if I still had this as an option, that you would have looked into?
The only thing that I can say that really has changed for me now is that I wish that I had known more about what my rights as a gun owner were and what the laws were pertaining to use of force. At that point, I didn't know any of that, you know. And I actually tell this story quite frequently in my classes. That's not a tough guy, badass moment for me. That's a look how lucky I was, because I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Right.
And here's the lessons you can learn from that. You know, even regarding my tactics, like everything that I did during that engagement was completely contrary to what I teach now. Like I did nothing right that night. I just happened to be not as wrong as they were, you know? So it was like, I was the lesser of the two evils that night, you know? But yeah, I mean, there's a lot that you have to, recognize that when you become a gun owner and you're going to carry for self-defense, you need to be a layman's expert in what your state and municipality's laws are on not only just the carrying, but the use of that weapon for self-defense. You know, I hear a lot of people, I get a lot of questions with people talking about warning shots. Warning shots are illegal everywhere in the United States, and you will go to jail for a warning shot. You know,
and that's pretty much just like firing into the air or something.
You know, somebody's posing a threat to you, and you're like, "Don't come any closer!" Pow, pow! You let two off in the air, shit. And like okay, like if you really think that there's a legitimate threat that this that you have to pull this gun in order to stop this person from killing you, and you have to shoot them to stop them from killing you, those warning shots should be in their chest,
right?
Bottom line, you know, you don't shoot guns up in the air because those bullets got to come down somewhere and those bullets can damage property or kill people, you know? And a lot of people don't think about that. You know, you think
I'll
about
I'll be honest,
it,
I never really thought about that. Like, what goes up must come down. Like, if for some reason, just if you fire it, it just disappears, the sun absorbs it or some shit.
Think about it. If you watch the news every year, January 1st, somebody dies from somebody shooting bullets in the air and coming down and hitting them a mile or two away.
Wow.
I mean, we're not talking about, you know, you shoot a bullet up in the air and it comes down, it could hit you. We're talking about you shooting a gun up in the air and the trajectory of that bullet potentially taking that bullet a mile or two away from you.
That's insane.
Right. And people don't think about that. You know, and a story that sticks out to me the most is, I think it was back in 2012, 8-year-old kid was sitting in church at midnight service on New Year's Eve. A bullet comes through the top of the comes through the roof and hits him in the top of the head and kills him. Somebody somewhere out there shooting their guns off on New Year's Eve didn't think about that, and that bullet came and found its way down through the roof of that church, hit this 8-year-old kid in the head and killed him.
That's bananas.
Right. Right. You know, that's why when I teach this thing, I tell people, don't pull your gun unless you have the don't pull your gun unless you have the intent on using it. But you need to know that that intent on using it is tied in with you being lawfully able to introduce lethal force into that engagement. Engaging with lethal force is a tool of last resort. You know, there's a large contingent within the gun industry of guys who, oh, I don't go anywhere if I can't carry my gun. Or, you know, they have this mentality that their gun is going to be this magic talisman that's going to solve everything. And I'm like, a gun is a very specialized tool for a limited set of circumstances in a very small field of use. Like, if you can't throw your hands.
Right.
If you can't throw your hands, a gun's not going to save you. because there's going to be situations where you should have just knuckled up with the cat, but you pulled
right,
the gun,
right?
Now you and now you spending a good portion of your time trying to keep yourself from getting locked up because you can't fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, saying you went to guns, and that's one of the things that we're seeing with a lot of these cops too. A lot of these cops and a lot of these shootings where we're seeing unarmed black men and white people as well getting shot. It's because these cops are not being properly trained on how to deal with violence. You know, you get guys who were born and raised in the suburbs, never had a fight before, probably got picked on in high school. Now all of a sudden they get some power in their life, they become a cop.
Right.
And the first time they get punched in the face is when they're down in Southwest Atlanta trying to effect an arrest. Well, now you're getting hit in the face by somebody who's accustomed to hitting people in the face.
Right.
And you panic. You know, they panic, and the first thing that they do is they want this to stop. So the first thing they do is they grab the tool on their belt that they know is going to stop this the fastest, mm-hmm. which is their gun. I call them fear biters. It's, you know, in the canine world, a dog will only bite you under three circumstances, whether he's injured, afraid, or trained to. All right? These guys are fear biters. They're shooting people because they're afraid of the consequences of that violent encounter that they were just introduced to because they've never experienced it before. And that goes back to a problem in police training.
And that makes perfect sense. I definitely agree with that. And my thing is, I'm just trying to understand, is there any gauge or any sort of exam or something that acts as a barrier between the two? So if it's like, hey, if someone's walking into somewhere to get a gun, maybe outside of just, okay, show me whatever other documentation you may need for me to use as a proof of me being able to sell this to you, is there any other sort of exam that can be like, okay, let me ask these certain probing questions to see if I can get somewhat of a mental gauge on this person, like I said, especially if they're younger, but really just for all ages, like what, if anything, what is that gauge? Because it just seems like, you know, it's kind of risky with there being so many places people can get guns from, whether it's L.L. Bean or a Walmart or a Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever. That part, I'm just like, is there anything? You know what I mean?
Well, so here's number one, 18-year-olds can buy long guns, but they can't buy pistols. And I think that part of the reason of that is because in this country, particularly in the South, there's a rich heritage of hunting mm-hmm. for sport or whether it's for food. You know, a lot of people take their kids hunting and stuff. A lot of manufacturers manufacture youth models of their weapons. So in order for a kid to be able to purchase one on their own, they made the age limit 18 years old, which to me makes sense
mm-hmm.
because if I can join the military at 18 and be issued a weapon and be dropped off in a country to fight a war that has nothing to do with me,
mm-hmm.
why can't I purchase this same weapon at home to hunt with or for self-defense?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Not all 18-year-olds are going to be mentally mature enough to handle the responsibility of owning a gun, but who's to determine that and say that this person should be denied their constitutional right because your opinion may be that they're not mature enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, and it's interesting when I have this conversation with African Americans because they forget that not 60 years ago, we were treated the same way regarding our voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so do we want to have to take a test to be able to vote?
Right.
You know, for somebody else to say, oh, well, you failed the test, but not show you the results or tell you why you failed.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're just using it to deny you your right. That's where the problem comes in. I don't really have an answer on what would be a better method when it comes to 18 and 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds owning guns. I don't know that there's a test that can determine their maturity level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me as a firearms instructor, it's a slippery slope because some states have mandatory training requirements for carrying a gun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slippery slope for me because as an instructor, I think everybody should be trained.
Mm-hmm.
As a person who believes in the Second Amendment, I don't believe that you need to have a mandated requirement to exercise a constitutional right. Because when you allow that in one area, you open the door for that to become the standard or the precedent for other areas, which, as we've seen historically, has been used to limit minorities from their abilities to vote and have a voice and things like that. So it's a very slippery slope. I mean, it's like you're opening a door that you may or may not benefit from on the other side. You know, all of the studies that have been done that I've read on gun control, there was one recently put out by the Washington Post, which typically is very anti-gun, that said that a multi-year study done by the author and a number of analysts revealed that none of the things that we recommend as gun legislative changes would have stopped any mass shooting that's ever taken place in this country. And see, the problem is that people who look at mass shootings and have these opinions about it, they're not looking at it from the right perspective. Whenever there's a mass shooting, all of the pro-gun, pro-NRA people immediately start getting on defense about you not taking away their guns. All of the anti-gun people immediately start talking about you shouldn't have these weapons of mass destruction that the military has. Neither one of those are the solutions to mass shooters. Mass shooters shouldn't be able to walk up into a school without being challenged with a rifle slung across his shoulder.
Right.
It's a security issue. Mm-hmm. Right? Why are we not putting more thought into access control of these schools, or having school resource officers or security contingents that are alert and that are stationed at access points into these schools to make sure that people can't just walk into these schools and do whatever it is that they want to do?
Right. You know,
that's not a gun issue. That's not a gun issue. That's not an NRA issue. That's not an anti-gun issue. What it's also not is, you know, so it's also not a mental health issue. We could say that, yes, this is a mental health issue because sane people don't walk into buildings and just start shooting people with ARs. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. But how do you fix that? Because you don't know that these people are crazy until they actually do some crazy shit.
Right.
By then it's too late. Mm-hmm. So how do you address mental health? You know, in a lot of these situations, well, in most of these situations, these shooters showed signs before the shootings. They made comments on social media. They made comments to their friends. You know, one of the things that I always joke about with people, but that's actually true, they all got fucked up haircuts. You look at all these crazy looking white dudes with these fucked up haircuts, and then they turn around and shoot some shit up.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, I'm going to start profiling motherfuckers. You got a fucked up haircut,
yeah,
and you got a gun, and I hear you say something crazy, I'm calling the cops on your ass,
yeah,
immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? People are ignoring the signs.
Yeah.
So, you know, the things like, oh, we got to get better at raising our kids, and we got to teach them better responsibility, and we got to teach them more to value life, and all that's a process. Mm-hmm. Putting metal detectors in schools is something that we could do tomorrow.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Having armed security and armed school resource officers, that's something we could do tomorrow.
Right.
You know. This whole arming the teachers thing, I just don't think that it's a good idea, and will probably never be on board with it the way that it's experienced or expressed now. You know, there are companies out there that are teaching classes to the teachers on how to engage an active shooter. Mm-hmm. That's not what teachers do. I mean, we saw in Florida last week, shit, that's not even what a lot of cops do, because the cops at that school stood outside and waited for the shooting to be over before they went in.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you take a person who is not a gunfighter, who doesn't have any combat experience, who doesn't have the mindset? That's the important part, the mindset to run towards gunfire. Because when you're hunting an active killer, that's what you're doing. You're running towards gunfire. You're not defending yourself from a robbery. You're not defending yourself in your home. Those are things where you have an advantage, or you have to react to something that's in your face right here. But that person's motive is different. A carjacker's motive is to take your car. A home invasion's motive is to steal the shit out your house. Mm-hmm. A mass shooter's motive is to kill as many people as possible.
Right.
Completely different motivation, completely different methodology of dealing with them. You have to be in a mindset. And it's almost, you almost have to put yourself in a mindset that you're hungrier to kill more than he is. Mm-hmm. Because he's running around killing people because he wants to get numbers. You have to be of the mindset that I'm going to kill the shit out this motherfucker before he gets his numbers.
Facts.
You know, and a lot of people just don't think like that. Most people are not really comfortable with violence. Mm-hmm. So when you telling them, grab your gun, go run towards this gunfire where you could potentially get shot, as you're running through all these chaotic kids in the hallway that are yelling and screaming, as you're stepping over bodies that have been mangled with these rounds from these ARs, and you're seeing a kid that was just in your period last period, now laying on the floor with his brains blown out. Mentally, all of that shit is gonna wear on you. You have to be a different type of person to deal with that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that school teachers are, because if they were, they wouldn't be school teachers.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't.
Right.
Wired like that. Yeah.
Right.
So to that, I have a few questions. So one thing I did read was that in the military, that while they do give people weapons at 18, they do have an IQ test. So apparently with this IQ test, if your IQ is below a certain number, then they don't even deem you able to perform in the military. So question is, in a situation like that, do you think that's something that could necessarily apply to? And I'm not even, and honestly, I'm asking that, like I said, from an unbiased standpoint, because that's, I'm not even sure if that's really fair. I don't know what my IQ is. It could be low as hell, and I'm able to operate in everyday life, or it could be really high. I don't know.
It's not actually an IQ test. It's just a standard aptitude battery to determine how smart you are and your ability to be able to learn certain job skills.
Okay.
So, like, for instance, when I went in the military, I scored really high on mine, and I qualified for every job in the military.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people who you know, they might get a 40.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll only qualify for, like, being a cook.
Right.
You know, or diesel, or a fuel mechanic or something like that. The guys that put fuel in the tanks and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's an aptitude battery. It's not necessarily an IQ test. And it doesn't have anything to do with their ability to properly use a weapon, because when they go to boot camp, everybody gets the same weapons training, regardless of what your score was.
Okay.
If they get any additional weapons training outside of that, it's basically going to be based on the job specialty that they chose.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you go in and you qualify, you go in the Army, you qualify for cavalry scout, you're going to get training on weapons that are specific to that job and Cav Scout's missions, which are going to be, you know, 50 cal machine guns and things of that nature that a cook is never going to see, you know.
Right.
Trying to implement something like that in the civilian world, again, you know, you're talking about a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about people who may be brilliant but just not good test takers. Do you stop them from being able to exercise their
right? Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, or people who are excellent test takers but are awkward as fuck and can't walk and chew bubble gum at the same time.
Facts.
Like, you know, you put a gun in their hand, they're gonna fucking trip and drop and fall with the gun in it. Like,
right.
You know, so, right. So I mean, you know, there really is no, that's where training comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where training comes in, and having qualified trainers like myself who can take you from being afraid of guns and have you shooting 5-shot bullseyes within, you know, a certain amount of time, and building that confidence up in you, and then teaching you through a progressive training format how to acquire the skills to work up to being qualified to carry a gun out in public and defend yourself with it if need be. You know, it's not as easy as people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, television and the media have created this false idea of what that really looks like. And people just get it all twisted up. And I spend a lot of time in classes derailing the myths of derailing the myths of John Wick and freaking, you know, Lethal Weapon and all of that other kind of stuff. So yeah, it definitely it's a challenge. I don't know what the answer is in terms of who should own a gun and who shouldn't own a gun. I think that the legislation that's in place right now works.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good legislation in theory. I think the government is just really fucking bad at managing it.
Mm-hmm.
So when people start talking about, let's do more gun control, you know, we need more gun control rules. Well, why? There's over 300 gun control laws on the books right now in this country. And the government can't manage those. So we're going to do what? Add more for them to not be good at?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of sense does that make?
Yeah.
You know, and then when I talk to people and say, well, what more do you think should be done? The things that they tell me are shit that already exist. So again, people come from a perspective of what the media has told them, or they come from a perspective of being emotionally attached to this instead of looking at this logically and doing their research. You know, and it's, oh, the mentally ill shouldn't be able to get guns. Well, they can't. It's specifically illegal for somebody who's been adjudicated mentally unfit to own a gun, to walk into a gun store and purchase a gun. Mm-hmm. The problem is the adjudication process. Mm-hmm. Who determines that this person is crazy? The failure is in the system. Elliot Rodgers. Elliot Rodgers was the son of the one of the executive producers for The Hunger Game in, I think it was San Bernardino or something, California, about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. He was a mass shooter, drove around, ran some people over, stabbed some people, shot a couple people, did some YouTube videos a couple of days before he did all of this talking about why girls don't like him. I'm good looking. I'm rich. I drive a BMW. The spoiled, entitled-ass white kid. Mm-hmm. Lost his shit because he couldn't get no pussy, decided that he was going to go around and start shooting motherfuckers up. Mm-hmm. Well, his mom sent the police to his house months before because he was talking crazy shit. And she was like, yeah, I know this guy got guns. He's crazy as fuck. Y'all need to go to his house and y'all need to check him out because I'm worried about him.
Yeah.
Police get to his house. He's 21 years old. They get to his house, knock on the door, said, yeah, your mom called us and told us that we need to come check on you. You mind if we come in and talk to you? Because we hear you got guns and you've made some you know, some comments that are kind of... He was like, yeah, I do mind. You can't come in. Which was totally within his right as a 21-year-old adult.
Mm-hmm. And what can you do at that point?
What can you do with that?
Yeah.
So that's where the system is broken.
Yeah.
You know, when these reports are made... Prime example. If you're sitting here in the break room and you're sitting around a bunch of your coworkers, and one of your coworkers says, you know what? I get tired of these fucking kids in my neighborhood walking through my grass, stomping on my flowers. I'm going to go over to Grady and I'm going to just fucking clean house. I'm going to take my AR over and fucking clean house. Who would you call?
I mean, by default, I'd probably say I'd call 911. If anybody, but outside of that, I don't know.
And tell them what? And what would be the expectation of... Right, like...
Like, yo, there's this crazy motherfucker in the break room, right. Goddamn. But yo, that's, this motherfucker about to go to Grady and go crazy.
But that's my problem. There's no clear cut guidelines on who to call or how to handle a situation like that.
Yeah.
Because you might call 911 and they'll send somebody out here to talk to you, and then they'll talk to the guy and be like, well, we understand that you said... He'd be like,
I didn't say that shit.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't say that shit.
Yeah.
What do they do now?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So there needs to be some clearer guidelines on how to report this. Mm-hmm. You know, we got this whole see something, say something thing when it comes to terrorism. Well, we need something like that for crazy motherfuckers with fucked up haircuts that want to go shoot up the schools too.
Yeah. It's funny because... It just seems... So, I went to see Black Panther a couple weeks ago, the night it came out. So, literally, we're walking into the theater, and literally walking up the aisle is this tall white guy, trench coat on, low haircut.
Yo,
I swear, bro, we was like...
My gun in my lap,
bro, we was like, yo, are we going to stay for this movie, or are we going to dip?
Right.
So, I turned, and I was like, yo, I was like... If anything sort of goes left, I got up and I walked over to the steps because, you know, you walk up the aisle.
Yeah.
I looked over to see how long the jump was. I was like, yo, just know. I was like, if anything goes left, don't look. I'm not grabbing hands. I'm just like,
right. No,
I'm going that way.
Right.
I may break my ankle on the way down. Right. I don't know, but we're dipping.
Right.
So literally the whole movie, we was just constantly just like... checking, just making sure.
Yo,
so, and it was like, but also it was just the fact that there was so many black people in there, and it was like this big husky black dude next to him, and all the time I was like, okay, I don't feel like, you know what I mean? We not about to.
And see, and that's where I make the point about mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
I would have gone and sat next to him.
Yeah.
Or behind him.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm always armed.
Right.
So my thing is, if he jump up with some bullshit, I'm putting five in his face before anybody loses their life or dies.
Yeah.
You know? You know, so again, it goes back to that teacher thing. You know, you said your mindset was to what's the closest escape hatch and what's the probability of me getting injured during that escape.
Right.
And my mindset is kill him fast.
Right. Right.
You know, a tall white dude in an all black movie with a trench coat on and it's 70 degrees.
Right. Right, you know, looks crazy.
And you got the fucked up haircut?
Looks crazy, bro. Like, but at the same time, it just seems as though, I don't know, for some reason, it just seems as though when we have these conversations about, okay, what can we do to prevent these things, oftentimes, sometimes it seems like it always encroaches on people's personal rights to just live their life. You know what I mean? So it's like, yo, if people are out here shooting up theaters, then maybe there needs to be someone at the door of every theater coming in and be like, okay, you got this trench coat on. Let me check you. Let me make sure. You know what I mean? But it's like we were saying before.
That's not encroaching on his personal rights. He's walking into private property.
I think you don't have
no rights in private somebody else's property.
And I think that could be it too, just the training of what is acceptable and what isn't. Because it's like we was having a conversation before. I'm from New Jersey. And up there, we did have metal detectors at every entrance of school.
Right.
You had to, school starts at 8:20. You had to be at school by 8 o'clock if you wanted to make sure you can get through the metal detectors in time to get to class.
Bro, I graduated in the 80s. It was the same way back then. Yeah. I got another friend who went to school in Chicago back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And he said same thing then.
Yeah.
So the precedent is there. We know it works.
Yeah.
You know, and I just read an article that was in The Source about why school shootings don't happen in the hood. It goes back to a societal thing.
Yeah.
You know, we grow up in these neighborhoods where we're forced to deal with adversity just by the environment that we live in.
Right.
We're forced to learn how to deal with adversity at an early age, you know. But a lot of these kids, they got this status, they got this position, they grew up with these entitlements. They don't learn how to deal with adversity.
Mm-hmm.
So now they go to school and they're getting picked on. They don't get the right girls. Their dad bought them a BMW instead of an Audi.
Mm-hmm.
This shit causes them to trigger and lose their shit because they've not been properly taught. Their minds haven't been properly cultivated on how to deal with adversity and how to deal with rejection and negativity.
Yeah.
So it creates an imbalance in them, and they just go ape shit and do dumb shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. And it also, speaking to that, and that's why it just seems as though most of the time when we're talking about these issues, it comes, I don't even, having these conversations and going to this depth, it just makes me feel even more that when people used to say, or people still say, like, yo, guns don't kill people, people kill people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's so many human issues here.
Right.
That it seems like it always comes back around to that point.
Right. Until somebody creates the automated gun that the automated gun with artificial intelligence in it that can just get up off a table and start selecting its victims without any interference or manual manipulation by a human, it's always going to be a human element. It has nothing to do with the guns. You know, people want to talk about what happens in these other countries that have banned guns and things of that nature, like in China, you know, you can't have guns. But yet 5 people walked up in a train station last year and killed 33 people with knives, stabbed them to death on the freaking subway platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about, oh, well, Australia banned guns and they don't have mass shootings. Well, in Australia's entire history, they only had 4 mass shootings. So they didn't even have enough mass shootings to statistically measure whether or not banning guns had an effect on that.
Mm-hmm.
But sexual assault and other violent crimes skyrocketed.
Yeah.
Why? Because criminals know that they won't get shot.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the areas of the U.S. that have the strictest gun control laws. California, New York, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
What's crime like there? What are gun crimes like in those places?
Yeah.
Through the fucking roof.
Yeah.
So if you got all these gun laws that are supposedly ending gun violence, why are they not working in a place where you have the most gun control laws? Because people who walk into schools, traditionally, people who do mass shootings and commit violent crimes don't walk into gun stores and purchase guns legally with the intent on doing that.
Right.
You know, something changes in their mind afterwards, or they go crazy about it. You know, it's all about being able to identify these people, man. We got to be able to identify. And, you know, and I blame some of that on HIPAA law. You know, you've got these medical protection laws in place now that prohibit doctors from reporting people that they think might be a threat or a risk.
Wow.
Unless they specifically state or claim, on this day, I'm going to go to this place and kill this person.
Wow. So it's like, you got to use keywords for me to be able to.
Right. Wow. Right. Right. You know, if you sitting there and you like, yeah, I just get angry sometimes and I just want to fuck some shit up. They can't call the police and be like, yo, you need to watch this guy.
That's crazy.
Because now it violates doctor-patient confidentiality. So again, the problems on stemming gun violence don't have actually anything to do with guns.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with processes that we have in place that limit us from being able to identify these things, or processes in place that hinder us from being able to get this information of warning signs to the right people.
Now, how much of this has to do with the NRA and how much doesn't? Because I'm not too familiar with the NRA. I just know usually if we're talking about gun owners, the NRA is usually the first group that, oh, the NRA, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I'm not sure. NRA is the ugly fat girl that everybody wants to pick on. You know, when it comes to guns, because they're the most outspoken and most vocal when it comes to defending our Second Amendment rights. I mean, they are the largest gun lobbying organization in the world. And although they're a U.S.-based organization, because only the United States has a Second Amendment, they're known worldwide. I appeared in a documentary a few years back that was done by a production crew from France. Nobody spoke English, but they wanted me to take them to a gun store and show them around and hold guns and take them to a range and all this kind of shit. And the one English word that they knew that I understood was NRA.
Wow.
They knew what the NRA was, you know, in terms of how, you know, what the NRA, what their fault is in this. I mean, it depends on what side of the argument you're on, you know. The anti-gun lobby is always going to blame the NRA for everything because the NRA has been successful at protecting our Second Amendment rights. You know, conversely, I do think that there may be some things that the NRA doesn't do right in terms of educating the other side on why they so diligently fight for our rights. The NRA is not interested in educating the anti-gun side. The anti-gun side is not interested in educating the NRA, so they're constantly bumping heads. Instead of them sitting down and saying, hey, this is what my issues are, this is what your issues are, where's the happy medium to where we can both get what we want? They never do that. They just get into these pissing matches, you know, your prom dress is uglier than my prom dress. You know, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Like at the end of the day, people are dying. So let's have some common sense dialogue and listen. You know, it almost seems like there needs to be a mediation between both sides.
Right.
You know, and that's not happening. You know, it's just like both sides are just trying to argue that their point is right. Now, I will tell you that a lot of NRA members are displeased with the NRA because the NRA has been known to cave and compromise on some things that are not in the best interest of gun owners. But to be quite honest, the NRA has also been guilty of completely ignoring the existence of black and brown gun owners. So I don't really fuck with them. You know, I know who they are. I look at what they do. I'm actually NRA certified as an instructor. But as far as being a member and supporting their politics, I don't. And I won't until I see them taking more effort into doing things to recognize the value of black and brown gun owners. You know, they've got these hunter safety programs and all of this other shit. Well, how about a home how about you take that hunter, those same hunter safety programs that you have in rural areas, and you come into the inner cities and you do firearm safety programs. You know, if you want to make a real impact on violent crime, go into cities and demystify and educate people on what guns, you know, are capable of and not capable of, and where the real issues are, because the media has convinced African American communities and communities of color that guns are the source of all things bad in the hood.
Right.
When the reality is, the source of all things bad in the hood is a lack of resources, a lack of education, a lack of, you know, of opportunities for wealth building. None of that has anything to do with guns. But now, if you're the person in the hood with the gun, you can take those resources when you see them from whoever has them.
Right.
So, you know, the NRA actually, I think, has the ability. I actually think the NRA could actually have a significant impact on racism in this country if they really wanted to. And I will tell you because, and I will say that because one of the things that I've seen is that as a black gun owner who still rocks Tim's and a fitted and I go on a range, anytime I go into a new range, I get all of the strangest looks from every white person in there. All right. But now, as soon as I approach the counter and we start talking and they see that I know what I'm talking about and I pull out my gun and I start shooting and they see that I can shoot, you start to see that ice melt.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's funny because you could be in a booth next to the redneck with the Confederate flag hat on and the NASCAR t-shirt and the whole shit. but you pull out your gun and you start shooting and you look like you know what you're doing, they'll lean over and be like, hey, brother, what's that you shooting over there?
Right.
Next thing you know, y'all get into a conversation and they realize, well, damn, you know, this black dude's not who I thought he was. And you're like, damn, this white dude's not who I thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're not even looking at each other as black and white. You're looking at each other as a fellow gun owner.
Right, right.
So the NRA could probably bridge that gap on some level,
mm-hmm.
you know, by letting black gun owners and white gun owners recognize, yo, you guys are on the same team fighting for the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The color of your skin shouldn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
What should matter is that you're able to protect yourself and your family and your loved ones by the work that we do. And here's how we want to help y'all facilitate that.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do none of that. They just totally ignore us. You mm-hmm. know. And again, I don't need them to validate me. So I don't care about the fact that they ignore us. But that's a bone of contention with a lot of people about the NRA. Like, they didn't say anything about Philando Castile and all of this other shit. And for that reason, they're racist. Well, I've never heard them say anything about a white dude that was shot by the cops either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I don't need them to say anything about Philando Castile in order for me to know that that was fucked up and it was wrong. And, you know, and what do we need to do to make sure that that doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
You know, that answer is educate yourself on what your rights are, what the gun laws are, and how to interact with police officers when you're carrying a gun.
So with that being said, do you think, because I know you said that you are registered as a trainer with the NRA,
mm-hmm.
to an extent, is the NRA still, I guess, somewhat of like a necessary evil in order to be a gun owner? Or
nope,
is there
not in the least bit. And you know, it's interesting that you asked me that, because I didn't realize until last year that there are so many people out here who think that you have to be a member of the NRA or be an NRA supporter to own a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where that comes from is, again, the media, because every time there's a gun issue, they throw the NRA into it, whether the NRA is involved or not.
Mm-hmm.
So they've created this idea to people that the NRA and gun ownership are the same thing. And it's not. I have never been an NRA member. I've owned guns for over 30 years. You know, I'm an NRA instructor, and I don't have to be a member to be an instructor. I'm an NRA instructor because their programs are the best out there at getting new shooters up to speed on how to safely handle a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been proven to be defensible in court. So if I teach you based on my NRA curriculums and you shoot somebody and the prosecutor wants to know, well, what was your training like? I can now bring them the NRA curriculum and said, this is what I taught him. This is how he performed. He showed me that he was competent in doing what he did. That's one less thing they have to use against you.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else can say that.
Right.
If I gave you Sam's combat pistol course and you shoot a motherfucker, you stuck.
Right.
You stuck. Yeah, you know. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I have to teach people a lot, that having the issues that you have with NRA politics is fine, but don't cut off your nose to spite your face. And what I mean by that is don't let your thoughts about their politics hinder you from taking their classes.
Mm-hmm.
Because the two operate on totally separate environments. The political arm is the NRA Institute for Legislative Action.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that don't give a fuck about us. Those are the ones that let Ted Nugent run around and say whatever the fuck he want to say. Mm-hmm. They got Wayne LaPierre standing up on TV talking about we've had enough minorities in the White House and all that dumb racist white supremacist shit. NRA training and education don't give a shit about nothing about you taking the classes and being able to shoot a gun well.
Mm-hmm.
Two totally separate entities. It behooves me to tell people to really think about that and get that out of their mind, because particularly black people, because if you're looking at this from a perspective of empowerment and you think about what Malcolm X said, by any means necessary,
mm-hmm.
if you see the NRA as an enemy, but the NRA has something that you can benefit from that can help you to empower yourself and protect yourself and to pass that information on to others that you care about, why wouldn't you do that by any means necessary?
Right.
You know? So it's a challenge in the black community for me to express that to people and them to get it,
mm-hmm.
To the point to where I'm only going to tell you once. I'm not going to argue with you about it.
Right.
I'm going to tell you what it is once. You either going to embrace it or you not.
Because mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, if somebody come running through my door, I already know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one that's worried about this shit.
Right. Yeah. So, because a few times throughout the conversation, we talked about how the media plays a part into, of course, the preconceived or misconceptions about mm-hmm. Different things. And I know earlier you was talking to Romero, and you guys were talking about mass shootings, and you had I think you said, you were talking about how there aren't as many in the U.S. as they make it seem, and also right. what's considered a mass shooting is right. can make it seem like there's right. more going on. So what are some of those things that you've experienced?
So recently, as a result of this Florida shooting, there's been this article floating around social media and news and televised news media about there having been 18 school shootings already in 2018. Mm-hmm. That is unequivocally a lie. Mm-hmm. All right. It was put out there by an organization that's headed by former New York City Mayor Bloomberg, who's ridiculously anti-gun. And he funds, and I forget the name of the organization, but it's a really anti-gun organization. They put that information out there. Mm-hmm. And with his billions of dollars that he has to back it, the message spread. Well, nobody bothered to do a fact check on that. So you got news reporters out there now on CNN and on NBC saying this shit. And the people who look at the news who are still gullible enough to believe that the news is actually true, they hear this and they think, oh, that's true. The reality is that by definition, a mass shooter is any shooter where an individual kills more than four people in one place at one time. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the FBI's definition of a mass shooter. Based on that definition, there have only been eight school shootings in the entire United States since 1966. Mm-hmm. Eight. Yeah. All right. In terms of mass shootings, I think there's been something like, since the 50s, there's been something like 150. Mm-hmm. But you're still looking at something that when you compare that number to the number of people who die in car accidents, the number of people who drown, the number of people who choke to death while they're eating. Mm-hmm. Those numbers are all significantly higher mm-hmm. than gun deaths, all right? So how do you measure something that in the grand scheme of how people die is really kind of statistically insignificant? Mass shootings are statistically insignificant when you're talking about the various ways that people die. Mm-hmm. You know, even when you compare them to the way that people die at the hands of guns, you know, more people commit suicide with handguns than they do than are victims of mass shootings. So how do you propose legislation, and how do you measure the effectiveness of this legislation on something that doesn't really happen as frequently as we've been led to believe? You know, the media these days, they're in such a competition to get the story and be the first ones with the story. Mm-hmm. They over-sensationalize shit. Mm-hmm. You know, CNN was the worst thing that ever happened to the news media mm-hmm. because it turned the news media into a 24-hour news cycle. You know, you said you're 28,
27.
Like, so I think CNN was probably around before you were born. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid coming up, the news came on at 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock. That's the only time you saw the news. You didn't have this constant 24-hour bombardment of negative images and negative information. That shit programs people.
Yeah.
When you hear it enough, you program it and you begin to think that this shit is real. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's just not. You know, the gun violence or mass shooting epidemic doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't exist.
And that just makes me think in regards to just what we're looking at in reference to like a balanced world. Because mm-hmm. if you're saying, hey, these many people, there are these many mass shootings, 150 since 1950 or whatever, or these many people die as opposed to drowning in a pool or things like that, it almost seems as though, because on one side I'm looking at it like, okay, life sucks sometimes. You know right. what I mean? So you can drown in a pool or you can choke on a Big right. Mac or, you know what I mean, get hit right. by a car or whatever. But these shootings are a part of a conscious act of malice.
Okay.
But on the other side, I'm just like, okay, life's a bitch sometimes. You know what I mean? So it's like, how do we look at this and be like, are we being a little too, if someone's making that argument like, hey, I know this many people got killed this year, but look at how many people did this or died this way. It's like, okay, is the real argument like, yo, we shouldn't be as pressed about people dying from guns because there's more people dying from this, or is it a matter of let's do a comparison
that oftentimes comes up in these conversations that I typically think is a weak argument, but people say, well, guns should be regulated the way cars are. You have to have insurance, and you have to have registration, and you have to do a test, and da 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 da. Mm-hmm. I always say that's a horrible comparison because driving is not a constitutional right; it's a privilege. Mm-hmm. And if you want to really compare driving, if you really want to compare the restrictions on driving that exist and the restrictions on guns, driving is not restricted from felons. Mm-hmm. Driving is not restricted from domestic violence people. You get a driver's license, that driver's license will allow you to drive anywhere in the country.
Right.
Do you really want to put guns on those terms? Do you really want to say that anybody can buy a gun anywhere and carry it anywhere in the entire country?
Man.
I personally would love that, because mm-hmm. then I don't have to worry about, you know, going to New York or wherever and not having my gun.
Right.
But the very people who are screaming about how gun control is out of line and they want to compare it to cars would actually be giving us more freedom.
Right.
With these guns. But so you say a malicious, an intentional act. Texting while driving. Mm-hmm. An intentional act that, although may not be malicious, but kills probably 3 times more people every year than guns. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? How do you regulate that? What does that go back to? Is it the car's fault? Is it the phone's fault? Mm-hmm. Or does it go back to the people?
Yeah. So, good point. So, my thing is, if, for instance, you said, okay, owning a car isn't a constitutional right.
Right.
And this may be going, like, more specific, deeper into it, but in regards to what constitutes, it's like, it's a constitutional right based off of a group of people's opinion. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, now that we've established the Constitution's been around for these many hundreds of years and it's been said, okay, you guys have the right to do this, especially if we're looking back and we're saying, okay, the right to do this, at least for the first however many hundred years the nation existed, literally didn't benefit us as Black people at all.
That's not true.
So explain to me, because from conversations I've been on the other side of, it's always been like, oh, we've had this right, but Black people weren't able to own guns, and for the first however many years,
able to own guns during slavery. Mm-hmm. But once the Emancipation Proclamation was signed and we were given our freedom, mm-hmm. Black people took up arms to keep the Klan from coming and burning crosses on their front yard, from kidnapping them in the middle of the night and killing them and lynching them. Now, there are countless stories of armed Black people who fought off bigots and white supremacists and Klan members because they were armed. Mm. But that's a part of our history, like a lot of things, that's hidden. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're still not seen across the board by everybody as being equal. But Blacks have definitely benefited from the Second Amendment and from gun ownership in exercising our rights and not becoming victims to hate crimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the Second Amendment wasn't something that came about as a result of somebody's opinion. The Second Amendment came as a result of this country fighting for its independence from England. Mm-hmm. And when we tried to become independent, England said, we're not
going to let you. Right.
So we fought against that. And now the Second Amendment, talking about the well-regulated militia, they wrote that as a stopgap from the same thing happening here internally. Mm-hmm. From the government growing so large and so powerful that it started to impose its will on the people instead of the people imposing its will on the government, which is the way it's supposed to act, the way it's supposed to be. If you look historically at every country that's ever been ruled by a tyrant, the very first thing that they did when they were in office was command their military and law enforcement to disarm the citizens. Mm-hmm. Once you disarm the citizens, it's easy for you to do what you want then. Armed people are not going to pile up in a railroad car and let you take them to a fucking gas chamber somewhere and smoke them out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? think about what the African slave trade would have looked like if Africans had guns. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been an African slave trade. You know what I'm saying? Because when the white dudes would have landed on the shores of Africa and went to, and you know, the warring tribes went and grabbed up Africans, and took, it would have been a gunfight. Mm-hmm. Motherfuckers with guns ain't trying to let you just do whatever you want to do to them. Yeah. It's just not how it works.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, a lot of people like to say that the Second Amendment was something, you know, it's a couple hundred years old. It needs to be changed. It doesn't apply now. It only applied to muskets. It didn't apply to ARs and stuff like that. The people who say that the Second Amendment only applied to muskets and that it's outdated and it doesn't apply to ARs are the same people who can never answer the question, then why does the First Amendment still apply to you disseminating information over a computer and not still stuck with wooden hand presses back when it was written? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a living document. You know, the meaning of it doesn't change. It adapts to the times that we're in. Mm-hmm. You know, in the same way that the First Amendment adapted with technology as it regards to how information is spread, so did guns. You know, they didn't know that AR-15s would exist. So, I mean, you know, come on. For them to, when people say, oh, well, it didn't mention ARs. Well, it doesn't mention muskets either.
Right. Right.
You know, it just says arms.
Yeah. So, transitioning over into just basic common knowledge. Mm-hmm. What are some things, if you are young, old, whatever, if you're a gun owner, if you're a black gun owner, if you're a female gun owner, what are some things that you think should be common knowledge that either you just feel should be common knowledge, or what are some things that through teaching classes you've seen that people have these often misconceptions yeah. of what their rights are?
So I would say the number one thing is you do not have to be a member of the NRA in order to own a gun.
Right.
Right. There is no such thing as stopping power. Stopping power is a myth that came about through television, you know, which people in the gun stores will tell you need to buy a bigger gun in order to stop the bad guy because the 45 will make a bigger hole and stop them. It's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Shot placement is what matters best. So there's no such thing as stopping power, which brings you to the next point. If you're going to own a gun for self-defense, you need to train on it and you need to be diligent on it and you need to be able to hit what you aim at. Mm-hmm. Because shot placement is what really matters in a self-defense situation. Where you're able to hit that person with the bullet is what's going to stop them, regardless of the size of the bullet. Every bullet in your gun has two things attached to it: a jail sentence and a lawyer. You miss what your intended target was and hit the wrong shit, there are legal consequences to that. So training is critical. Mm-hmm. I would even go as far as to say, don't even buy a gun until you've been trained. Find a range that has gun rentals. Find an instructor. Have that instructor take you to the range and teach you the basic fundamentals of safe handling. While you're learning those basic fundamentals of safe handling, you're also finding out by trying different guns which gun works best for you.
Right.
So now when you go buy a gun, you can make a more informed decision, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to walking in a store and the gun store guy telling you, here, buy this $1,200 SIG because he's going to get a $25 kickback off of every $1,200 SIG he buys.
Right.
When you could get away with buying a $400 Glock that'll do the same thing and be less maintenance, easier to maintain, carry, all this other stuff. So, you know, some very basic things, you know, train, seek qualified professional instruction, try it before you buy it. You don't have to be a member of NRA. And don't get caught up in the caliber debate about which caliber is better. Shoot the gun that's most comfortable for you.
Okay. Now, in regards to let us know what you have available, because I know, like I said, you're doing more stuff with women who want to get into gun owning, and you just have classes in general. So what's some of that information?
Right now, the best way to get in contact with me and see what I'm doing is to follow me on Instagram. It's at caliber_training_group. Caliber, CALIBER. That's where I spend the most time and the most of my social media efforts, really getting information out there. I put up videos. I'm currently in production right now on a on shooting 72 videos over the next year that I'm going to be putting on our YouTube page, going to be launching our Caliber Training Group YouTube page, where there's going to be instructional information on there. Those videos are going to be very detailed. The detailed full-length ones will be on Patreon for people who want to subscribe, but then there'll also be small snippets from it on YouTube. And I actually decided, you know, within the last couple of days, I'm probably going to launch a podcast myself in the next 30 days.
Nice.
And talk about these issues. Because, I mean, we've been going at this for what now?
It's been at least an hour and a half, right. Probably. Yeah.
We've been at this about an hour and a half. So clearly, I got a lot of shit to say.
Right.
So, yeah, I think the best way for me to get that information out there for people is, you know, to do my own podcast. I devoted 2018 to being the year that I just focus on building resources for people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, following me on Instagram will keep you up to date on what those resources are, because I'm gonna do all of my drops there, and everybody will see what's popping and what's going on there.
Nice. All right, well.
So I got a question for you.
Oh, all right, cool.
Yeah, when you going to the range, man?
I'm gonna get there. I'm definitely gonna get there. Romero's been on me, and I literally have been putting it off because I literally just found out how fairly simple the process of getting a gun license is.
Here in Georgia is very simple. You go to your probate court, you fill out the application, you give them money, they give you a phone number to call for your fingerprints. You go get your fingerprints done, you go home and you wait, and they mail it to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just that simple.
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
Right. And the beautiful part about that is that because you've already gone through that background check process,
mm-hmm.
once you have your permit, when you go to a gun store and purchase your gun, there you don't have to do another background check.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, your permit shows that you've already been checked.
Okay, cool.
You know. So yeah, I mean, it's ridiculously easy. I think every black person who doesn't have any felony convictions
mm-hmm.
should own a gun, because at the end of the day, you know, the nobody's coming to save you. And we've seen a number of instances, unfortunately, to where you black people have called the police for help and the police get there and end up shooting them.
Facts.
So get your gun, get training, and you know, when you call the police, it's for cleanup.
Facts. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna get on it. And then wait, no. So do I have to have my license before I come to a training class?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
That's good to know. So I'll probably be there before.
We could take you to the range right now.
Okay. Okay. So I might come holler at you sometime next week then.
Right, because the range is right down the street.
Yeah. Is that the one that's right on the corner by the Burger King?
Yep.
That's where you be at?
Yep. I'm going there right now.
No way.
I'm going there right now when I leave here. I got a zero weapon.
That's what does that mean?
I gotta line up the sights so that if I need to shoot you in your face at 100 yards, I won't miss.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So how good, like how far do you think you can knock somebody off from like what's the farthest you've shot?
The furthest I've shot is 100 yards. I've shot an 8-inch steel plate at 100 yards with a handgun.
That's about like a football field.
That's a football field, yeah. And an 8-inch, you know, an 8-inch steel plate is about the size of a human head, you know. There's a video I'll tag you in on my Instagram page of me shooting a ping pong ball swinging from a string at 25 yards.
With what kind of gun?
With a handgun, a Glock.
Yo, that's bananas, dog.
Yeah, I had a nerdy friend of mine and from Georgia Tech do the math on that. Shooting a ping pong ball at 25 yards is the equivalent to hitting a 6-foot man at 281 yards. You know, not that I could do that with a handgun, but you know, it's just one of those things. Like accuracy is everything for me.
So is accuracy regardless of what you're shooting with, or is it like, yo, this gun is different than this one?
Nah, the fundamentals are the same. Sight alignment, trigger control, regardless of what gun you're shooting. Your sights mm-hmm. have to be properly aligned, and you have to press the trigger smooth enough so that you don't disrupt that sight alignment. And then you have to be able to properly set those sights on the target where you wanted to hit it. As long as you can do those three things, you should be able to hit whatever it is that you aim at most of the time.
What's the worst gun owner story you've heard? Like, yo, like, you did absolutely everything wrong in this situation. Or, like, you just made one mistake that was like, yo, like, if you said this or you did this instead, this whole thing could have went different.
Those usually result in death. There's a story a couple of years ago about a sister in North Carolina who was being, she was going through a domestic situation, and she had a restraining order against a dude, and she was coming home from work one night. She was armed, had her gun in her purse. She had never had any training, though. Dude ran up on her. She tried to get her gun out of purse. He took the gun from her, killed her.
Damn.
Right. Had she gotten some training, she would have known that off-body carry in a purse is probably not a good idea,
mm-hmm.
number one. She would have known how, she probably would have had more experience in training with how to actively engage and get that gun into the fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she probably would have had some keys on how to be more situationally aware to see the dude run up on her before he could actually get to it, to where she could draw the gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the gun game, distance equals time. The further away the threat is to you when you notice it, the more time you have to react to that threat and, mm-hmm. and get your gun into the engagement. So, yeah, so a lot of those situations where it's like the worst I've heard where you should have done this usually ends with the person who should have done whatever being killed.
Dead. Yeah.
Right.
Damn.
Fucked your whole shit up, didn't it?
That, bro, honestly, like a lot, like, and like, it's like we were saying, like, a lot of it just seems like there's so many other things that you should work on both beforehand and once you get that weapon, you should. Okay, let me work better at being aware of my surroundings. Let me get better at being quicker, or you know what I mean? It's just like so much.
Here's the thing people don't realize. Carrying a gun for self-defense is a martial art.
Mm-hmm.
The same way you don't walk into a karate school or Brazilian jiu-jitsu school and take one lesson and think, okay, yeah, I'm ready to go fuck up the world.
Right, right, right.
it's the same shit with guns.
Yeah. You know?
I've been carrying professionally since 1991.
Yeah, that's as long as I've been alive.
Right. And I still go to classes as a student every year.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not even like, oh, yeah, well, I'm an instructor now. People pay me to do this. So I don't, you know, I don't need to
what
learn
anything
new. What
could you, right? Being a gun owner for that long, like, what do you go in there one day and be like, oh, shit, like, I never knew this. Or I got better at, like, that just, guns seem like such a straightforward thing. Like, in regards to, like, the care around it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems like, yo, like, if you know it, you know it. If you spend 5 years on it or 10 years on it, like, oh, I've pretty much seen 99% of what I would see.
Right. But one of the issues with being an instructor is that oftentimes you spend more time on the range teaching other people than you do practicing your own skills.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm not practicing my skills as frequently as I would want to because I'm teaching all the time,
yeah,
I go to these classes to give me that opportunity to fine tune my skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the stuff that I do now is a lot of force on force training. And what that means is instead of standing in one spot and shooting at paper, we have simulated guns and we're doing man-on-man drills with protective gear on. So we're simulating actual...
Oh, so y'all be busting at each other with the shit on?
Yeah, we busting at each other with the shit on.
That's crazy.
It's like paintball.
It's like those big vests, like the...
Nah, you ain't wearing no vest. Like
you're probably wearing like Iron Man suits
and
shit on.
Nah, you got a helmet on and, you know, that's pretty much it. Helmet and...
So how the hell y'all shooting at each other with helmets on? Like headshots?
Yeah.
Bro, y'all going out here just taking headshot each other with a helmet on?
Yeah, but it's like, but what I'm saying is the bullets are like wax bullets.
Bullets. I was like, yo, that's y'all are like on some paintball. Elite.
Nah, that's why I said it's like paint. That's why okay, I said it's okay, like okay. paintball. It's like paintball on steroids.
Okay, yeah. I totally missed that part.
Yeah, right,
cool. Y'all were like, yo, you gotta be out of here to be running around with a helmet on, busting shots.
Yeah, you only take one of those classes.
Right.
You
facts,
only get through that class
facts,
once.
Facts.
Nah, it's called simmunitions. It looks like a bullet, but it has a little wax pellet in the top of it.
Uh-huh.
And when the shit hits you bare skin, it'll break skin. You know, you'll bleed. It'll leave a bruise on you for a week or two. Mm. And the shit hurts, but it's about as real as you're gonna get to a real gunfight without being in an actual gunfight.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what I do now is that because yeah, my basic shooting skills, I can pretty much hit whatever I aim at. Now my focus is on fighting with that gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then taking those lessons learned and teaching them to my students because gunfights are never what you see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They're never what you see on TV, you know. So we'll put you in realistic scenarios to test you out and see what your reactions are going to be. And, you know, like we'll put you in a carjack scenario and like, okay, well, what do you do? And we're not going to tell you what's going to happen, but we'll tell you what's, you know, you're in a car, you're sitting at the light, respond to the threat. And then we'll tell the actor to go do something specific.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't respond a certain way in a certain amount of time, we tell him to draw his gun and start shooting at you and see what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know? it's better that you learn where your fuck ups are in that situation.
Then it'd be the real thing going on.
Then it'd be sitting at the corner of freaking Covington Highway and Wesley Chapel, and a motherfucker really run up on you, and you like, oh shit, what now?
Right.
And you find out that your gun is not in the right position because of the way you carry to deal with this kind of threat. Or you find out that, you know, the way you stop your car is too close in front of the car to the car in front of you, so you don't have any room to maneuver and pull off if somebody tries to car you. Just different things like that, you know. So that's where the majority of my training is now. There's always something to learn, bro. Always something to learn. And every time I go to one of these classes, I come back with something that I can share with my students to get them at a higher level of performance without making the same mistakes that I did coming up.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to lessen the learning curve for the people that give me their money to come and learn this stuff. I want to make sure that I'm giving them the best possible information I can give them.
Mm-hmm. So what I've been told is if you're a gun owner, mm-hmm. especially a black gun owner, and a vehicle, and you get pulled over by the police,
mm-hmm.
the best thing to do is put your weapon on the dashboard.
Who told you that?
This is me looking online for videos and stuff.
And you,
they was like, you should. They was like, you should put your weapon on the dashboard.
Okay, so let me say, because there's only one motherfucker that I've ever heard say that, and it was this Jamaican Caribbean dude.
He might have been the one that made that video.
Right. Don't ever look at that motherfucker's videos again. I don't even want to say his name because I don't want to give that nigga no shine.
Oh, man.
But he is the worst fucking firearms instructor in the world.
Did you see the video? Side note, but did you see the guy who was teaching the class and said, this is a, oh man, I forgot what gun he said, but he was like, I'm the only one certified to use, and shot himself in the leg?
Yeah, he was a DEA.
Bro, when I seen that shit, I was like, that's what made me just be evil. I was like, yo, I don't even know about going to these classes, bro. Like,
he
what
was a
the hell?
He was a DEA agent, and he was supposedly doing a gun demo in a public school.
Yeah, and there was kids in there and everything.
Right, and he didn't clear his weapon. This is one of the reasons why I tell people that just because somebody was a cop, but just because somebody was in the military, doesn't make them a firearms instructor.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a perfect example of it. But yeah, that shit about the dude, like that thing that he told you about putting the gun on the dashboard, don't do that. That'll get
so,
you shot.
So what's the best protocol if you're getting pulled over by the police with a weapon?
So in Georgia, you don't have what's called a duty to advise.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have your gun in your holster, you don't have to tell a cop that you're armed. And I would advise you not to.
Mm-hmm.
If he pulls you over for a traffic violation, all y'all need to be concerned about is that traffic violation.
Right.
So put your hands on the steering wheel
mm-hmm.
and don't move them until he tells you to. What I typically do is, because I know I carry on my body, as soon as I see the blue lights behind me, I get all my documentation and shit out then mm-hmm. before I pull over and have it in my hand. And when he tells when he walks up to the car, both of my hands are on the steering wheel with my documentation in my hands.
Now, when you say documentation, you're talking about your gun license, or you're talking about just like your ID and stuff?
No, yeah, my driver's license and my insurance
papers.
Right,
because we're strictly talking about this violation.
Right,
okay, cool.
Right. He doesn't need to know I have a gun on me.
That's just asking for trouble at this point.
It's asking for trouble, and there's no legal obligation for us to do that. Some states have what's called a duty to advise, where you have to tell a police officer. Georgia is not one of them. And I get pulled over. Well, I've kind of slowed down now because I got tired of giving them all my money. But mm-hmm. in 2012, I got 11 speeding tickets.
Damn.
So I was getting pulled over.
How you still got a license?
Right.
Bruh, right. Shit.
Yo, so funny story about that. Prepaid legal saved me from getting my license suspended or getting any points on my thing, yo. Hmm. I had prepaid legal, son, and every time I got a speeding ticket, I sent it to them. They handle it for me. I mail in the fine. No points, no insurance premium raise, none of that shit.
Might have to look into that.
Yeah, prepaid legal saved me, bro. But but yo, I used to get pulled over all the time, and at no point did I ever tell them I have a gun. Now, one time I got pulled over because my registration was expired. And this mm-hmm. is a story I told on United States of America. They cut a piece out, so they were actually going to arrest me.
Mm-hmm.
But the cop didn't pat me down. So when he's going to put me in the car, I'm like, yo, aren't you going to pat me down? He was like, do I need to? Do you have weapons on you? I said, multiple. He's like, what do you have? I said, I got a Glock 17. I got a 380. I got two knives. I got a baton. I got pepper spray. So he takes all the shit out of my pockets or whatever. And then he's like, you got any other weapons on you? I was like, not unless you got a vagina. And he didn't necessarily like my joke or whatever, mm-hmm. but, you know. But the fact of the matter is that that's the only time when I would tell a police officer that I'm armed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he asked me to step out the vehicle or something like that, I'll step out the vehicle. And once I'm out the vehicle with my hands in clear view, I'll let him know, officer, I'm armed. I'm carrying a 9mm Glock 17. You know, I'm carrying an appendix in the front, right hand draw. And please advise me on what you want me to do.
Mm-hmm.
If they tell you, go ahead and take the gun out, be like, nah, I'm not comfortable with that. I'll expose the gun to you and you can remove it from the holster.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll tell them to watch my hand slowly and I'm going to remove the entire holster without taking the gun out.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, it's just you got to be smart and you got to think, you got to think that this could potentially end bad until it doesn't end bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so for me, I'm always going to be thinking, I got to make sure that I don't give this motherfucker no reason to think that he was justified in killing me.
Right, right. So you said you had a few things on you. I think you said you had a knife, two guns, and some pepper spray. So do you suggest that people are just armed in general? Like, oh, even if you're not having a gun at this point, maybe you don't want to take that step yet, but you should at least have a knife on you. You should at least have pepper spray. Because I know usually, generally growing up, that was something, and like I said, this could go into that weird feminism, masculine thing. It's like, oh, if you're a woman, just make sure you have pepper spray and stuff like that. But it's like, maybe that's something that we should all just have just out of safety. You know what I mean? So what's your like?
I think pepper spray is actually more useful than a gun. Mainly because you're going to be approached by assholes that are going to want to encroach on you and bother you and maybe make you the victim of a crime that won't legally justify you shooting them.
Mm-hmm.
But you spray them in their face with some pepper gel and set they shit on fire. Like, I promise you that pepper, when you get sprayed with pepper spray, that shit hurts for about 3 days.
Shit.
Right. It's an irritant to your eyes, your nose, and your skin in general. So your shit is burning for 3 days. And everybody doesn't need to be shot. Some people just need a dose of pepper spray in the face, you know? And to the point to where I carry pepper spray in my car. Because a lot of road ragers out here that decide they want to stop in front of you, get out their car, all kind of dumb shit like that. I've had to draw my gun on a couple of people for that reason.
Mm.
Now I just pepper spray them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I pull out around them and I hold ass while they, you know, while he's
trying to get their life together.
While he's sitting there trying to get their life right, you know, I'm like, yeah, right, you're going to think about this shit when you get home. But yeah, I think if you carry a gun, you need to have pepper spray. If you don't carry a gun, but you still want to be able to protect and defend yourself, carry pepper spray, you know, and I say pepper gel as opposed to spray, because the spray, if it's a windy day, could blow back into your face. The pepper gel
gonna stick.
The gel gonna stick to them. You know, you don't have to worry about it blowing back on you.
Oh, that'd be ugly, boy. Right. Bro, that would piss me off so bad.
Now both of y'all fucked up, right?
Yo, I'd be so tight. Oh man.
And I mean, you're talking about $20 for a canister of pepper spray that'd give you a good 18 shots.
Cool.
And the distance on it is anywhere from 12 to 15, 18 feet.
Damn.
So the person ain't even got to be
close. You can buy it from across the street.
From across, just, yo, I could be on one side of this room, you could be on the other, and I could still blast you in the face and have some distance left.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good thing to have. I mean, you know, I wish that the places like New York where you can't carry pepper spray, but you know, here,
that's so weird though.
New York,
it's
is
almost
a whole
like, bro, y'all don't
country,
want us
bro.
To do shit. Like, you don't right? want us to be empowered to protect ourselves at all.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
That's crazy. And then that's why it was crazy when you were saying how in Australia, they don't have guns, but the sexual assault thing is through the roof. It's like, what are y'all trying to do
here?
Yo, not
like, only
what's
is the sexual
on?
Assault thing through the roof, the conviction level is extremely low. Like, people commit acts of sexual assault in Australia, and they very rarely get convicted. So Australia's a rapist paradise.
They just put them right back out there, like,
right,
yo.
You going there, you walking around taking pussy, and you know that you ain't going to get shot or go to jail for it?
Oh, man.
It's crazy. But you got people that don't know this that sit around talking about, oh, well, Australia banned guns, and they haven't had a mass shooting since then. Yeah, but motherfuckers is getting raped every day.
So if you're a woman in New York, or a man in New York, especially, and you can't have pepper spray, what, like, do you suggest carrying a knife, like a blade?
You can't carry
like
a knife.
Bruh.
You can't carry a knife. You can't carry no kind of weapon, bruh.
So you pretty much just got to have hands.
You got to have hands.
And hope. And
you
hope.
Gotta you got to have hands, or you got to have a real good speed in the 40.
Oh, man, bro.
Yeah, you got to have hands.
That's bananas.
And that's why New Yorkers, that's why we got such bad attitudes and shit, because we deal with so much shit. We deal with so much shit just on a day-to-day basis that you just, everybody seems like a threat to you.
Yeah.
You know? It's one of the worst places in the country to live. I would never move back there. Mm. I would never move back there. This shit that I own, the gun that I got on me right now would probably get me 15 years in jail in New York.
Oh, my God. What kind of gun is that?
Glock 17 with extended magazine.
But that look like some Call of Duty shit. Bruh, Sam is sitting across from me with a gun that Romero was playing with on Call of Duty the other day. That joint looked crazy. It got a damn... It looked like a red beam infoscope.
Flashlight on it. Got a flashlight on it. I got a Trijicon RMR, which puts a red dot on here. So now when I aim, I just put the red dot on it. This is 500 lumens because I can't see in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that movie theater situation you told
me. Right.
I need to be able to identify that motherfucker, put the dot on his head, and shoot him without killing anybody else.
Oh, man. So, okay. So, question. So, if you have a weapon like that and it does have the dot on it, is the dot pretty much securing that? Like, does the dot take away the need for good aim? Like, oh, dot's there, boom, you're good to go?
Because you still got to be able to press the trigger smoothly without moving the gun to keep the dot where it is.
Okay.
So a lot of people run out and put lasers on their guns not recognizing that laser still requires you to have good fundamentals.
So it's not really a super cheat code. It's just like, a little bit of guidance, but you still got to have the fundamentals.
Nah, what it does is it allows you to be able to see your point of aim when you take the shot. It also will allow you to shoot around. Like if you hiding behind something, you don't have to stick as much of your body out from behind that cover to get your shot. Because now all you got to do is put your arm around there and peek out and see that the red dot is on them and just, if you've got a clean trigger press. If you don't have a clean trigger press, then the dot is not going to help you.
And what's the trigger press? Oh, you mean your ability to press the trigger. Okay.
Because what can happen a lot of times is that a lot of people, safety check, a lot of people will press the trigger, but if they don't have the ability to independently move their trigger finger from the rest of their hands, what happens is, when they press the trigger, their hands are happy. So now when I'm shooting, I could be aiming at you like this, but when I press the trigger,
those fingers you know what? Little changes like that can mean somebody's life, though.
Right.
Good or bad, depending on what you're trying to do or not so much.
Right, because that bullet is coming out so fast that even the slightest move, the further it travels, the wider the arc it's going to travel.
Yeah.
So if we're at 7 or 10 yards and I move an eighth of an inch.
Yeah, because it may start right here, but it'll smooth out that. That makes a whole lot of sense.
And now you done hit the 6-year-old girl that's standing in line with her mom at Wendy's waiting for a Frosty.
That's crazy.
And you're going to jail.
That makes a whole bunch of sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is why ongoing training is critical. Mm-hmm. You can't take one or two classes and think I'm going to run out there and be ready to take on the world.
Yeah.
Like, this is some shit that you have to go. I recommend that everybody take a class once a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then in between that, go to the range. I would say weekly.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to go weekly, you know, dry fire practice at home. Dry fire practice is just simply practicing holding the gun properly and pressing the trigger without the front sight moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can practice that, and then when you go to the range and put bullets in the gun and just test those same fundamentals and make sure that you're hitting what you aim at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a commitment. It's a huge responsibility, but there's a commitment to maintaining proficiency that a lot of people take for granted.
Yeah. And so do you have to clean that every day?
No.
Is that like some movie shit, like motherfuckers be bringing the whole gun apart and then clean the coils and then like Major Payne when he was hanging upside down?
So the general consensus is that you should clean it after every time you go to the range.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Glocks are really low maintenance. They're well designed. They will function even when dirty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got, and I don't recommend anybody ever do this, but my first Glock that I bought, I intentionally tried to break it because I wanted to see if it was as good as everybody said.
Mm-hmm.
So I put 27,000 rounds through it and never cleaned it. And the gun functioned flawlessly.
Wow.
But I would say people, you know, every 300 to 500 rounds, the average person should get in the habit of cleaning their gun every 300 to 500 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got one like this sitting at home, disassembled last night that I got to clean when I get home because I've put so many rounds through and it got so dirty that it's now starting to malfunction. but I probably got 40,000 rounds through that gun.
And then once you clean it, it'll be like new?
Yeah. Yeah. Once I clean it and put it back together, it'll be like new and, you know.
So how much does a gun like that cost? Like, if I'm a new gun owner, I'm not trying to spend more than, because I'm not a gun connoisseur.
Right.
I just want to have something for protection. What are you suggesting?
I tell everybody to budget $500 to $600 for their first gun. Because that $500 to $600, I'm going to advise you on using that money to make the best decision capable for you based on your capabilities to purchase your gun, your cleaning kit, training ammo, self-defense ammo, and potentially a lockbox or a safe if you have kids in the house. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get all of that for $500 or $600.
Well, that's not too bad.
Nah. Now, you could spend more, but you don't have to. And I tell people, before you start going out there spending $800, $900, $1,000 on guns, get good with that $300, $400 gun first. Mm-hmm. Get good with that. Learn as much as you can about being a gun owner so that when you go out there and you make these $1,200 purchases, you're making it for specific reasons. You know, this gun is hand polished and tuned to do this, that, and the third. I personally have never seen a need for that. Mm-hmm. Because of my credentials to where I teach the armed security at a state level here in Georgia, I can purchase Glocks on what's called Blue Label, which mm-hmm. is their law enforcement pricing. Mm-hmm. So I pay $398 for this gun.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I suppose that costs how much, like six or eight?
$560 to $599. Okay. This light that's on it, though, cost me $325. And this cost me about $250. So
it's about $1,000 altogether.
Right.
So is that light and beam, is that like phantom powered? Or does that take like a battery?
It takes two batteries in it.
Okay.
And it's 500 lumen, and the way that it's designed, this beam will go easily on 150 yards.
Dang. That's
so I can light up. I can light if we're on a football field and we're standing end zone to end zone or goalpost to goalpost, I can light you up and see you at that 150
clearly,
yards.
Yeah.
Right. And then the red dot on there. I needed to shoot you, I could. But I like you, so I'm not going to
thank you. I appreciate that, Sam. I really, really, really do. I really know that comforts me a whole bunch. You know? All right, Joe. Well, on that note, I appreciate the fact that Sam decided not to shoot me throughout this whole interview. And I really do appreciate your time, man. Like I said, when we talked, when I called you that one day, last week, you know, I really appreciate your outlook because this is a conversation that I feel like all of us are just naturally because of media becoming aware of. And right. I think because how media is, how we're finding out about it,
right.
We're literally finding out about it with all of the wrong information right. at the same right. exact time.
You can pretty much guarantee that if you listen to a news report about a gun and they're giving you a description about a gun or bump stocks or where they, you can pretty much guarantee 80% of what they're saying is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm basing that on actual experiences that I've had where I've been in CNN studios and listened to the shit that they said when they were introducing me. And I'm like, that's not right.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not true at all.
Yeah.
You know, or just some of the people that they have as gun experts. Like I was on one interview and it's on my YouTube page, actually, where they were like, yeah, we've got this guy here. He's ex-cop. He's a gun. And he was explaining the difference between a semi-automatic and a fully automatic.
Mm-hmm.
He literally said, a semi-automatic goes pew, pew, pew.
No.
And a fully automatic goes brrr.
He hit him with the Kevin Hart.
That was their, that was their gun expert. That was their gun expert. So, yeah. So, if that's the place where people are getting their information about guns, they can pretty much... Like, when a news report comes on, they're talking about guns, turn that shit off, because you're going to learn just as much by not listening to it
yeah.
as you would by listening to it. So yeah. So, I appreciate you having me down here, man. I appreciate the opportunity. Like I said, I want to get into this podcasting thing. We done talked for damn near 2 hours now.
Yeah, this, crazy, right, crazy.
Which is why I know I need my own podcast.
Yeah, right, talk right, about facts. This shit. And he might be doing some of those episodes up here at Tree Sound, too. So, we definitely right, got to get you right, up here for so some
we,
of those.
Right. So, we could definitely make it happen. I want to get the information out there to the people so that, you know, particularly so that my people could be more educated about this stuff, man, and get it from a source that they feel more comfortable with because, you know, we look like each other. We share the same melanated blessings and
definitely.
You know, and they get to understand that my motives are pure.
Definitely.
So
what's your Instagram, your Twitter?
My Instagram is at caliber underscore training underscore group. My Twitter is at caliber TG. I almost never use Twitter. I just
okay, so Instagram is better.
Yeah, Instagram okay. is better. I'm going to get better at the Twitter thing, but you know, I'm almost 50 years old, so I don't
it's
really
It's so
understand
much, bro.
This.
I feel like if you're good at one, maybe you need right. to cater to the others right. a little bit, right. but it's too so much
I,
going on.
What I do is I got my Instagram set to where when I post something, it yep. shares to Twitter.
Yep, nice.
So,
nice.
You know, so
that
yeah.
works. So be sure to follow him on that. You guys know my personal Instagram and Twitter is KVLE, and the podcast Instagram is One Could Argue, O-N-E, Could Argue. Shoot us, questions. You could email me info@onecouldargue.com. If you have any other questions, I definitely plan on having Sam back on here for any other questions or just occasional come through and chop it up for me. You know, we talked about possibly doing a segment or something. So,
you know, if y'all want to bring me back for a 15, 30-minute segment every podcast, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, we're gonna work it out. So, yeah, let's definitely do everything we can to get you guys equipped mentally and physically
right.
for taking on the task of being a weapon-carrying human right. being, because it is important. Because
when the shit pops off, ain't nobody coming to save you but you.
You got to be ready. And on that note, thank you guys so much. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you on the next one. Take care.
Peace.